Welcome to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Welcome to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and for the month of November, we're looking at the Social Security Administration, and for this week, we're taking kind of a unique view on the subject. We're looking at the Inspector General's office at the SSA. Patrick O'Carroll is the SSA's Inspector General. And Patrick, why don't we just start with a brief history of your office, because it's less than 20 years old. Where did it begin, and what are some of the challenges that you're helping the Social Security Administration face?
Well, Sean, we started in 1995 when SSA became independent from Health and Human Services. And at the time, they needed to, with independence, they needed to establish an Office of Inspector General. And also at that time, I was employed by the Secret Service. And I was in sort of the process of deciding whether to take another assignment with the Secret Service. And my boss at Secret Service came to me and he said, hey, I just was offered a position with this new Inspector General at the Social Security Administration. And he said, you know, would you be interested in coming over with me? SSA was just starting when they were trying to get experienced law enforcement officers and auditors from both the HHS, their IG, and then bring in a new group of people. So about 100 of us started off the agency in 1996. And at that point, we made a decision to have a larger investigative force at this IG, which is a little bit different from other IGs because one of the purposes of this new IG was to prevent external fraud towards SSA's programs. So probably right from the beginning, we put about half of our resources towards investigators and about a quarter of our resources, or a little bit more than a quarter, towards audit. And then the other quarter was, you know, between counsel and other support organizations. And we've kind of grown from that 100-person nucleus to about 600. And at 600 people, we're probably, oh, I'd say maybe the fourth or fifth of the larger IGs that are out there.
Now, I spoke earlier in this series to Mr. Peter Spencer. He's the Deputy Commissioner for Budget, Finance, and Management for the SSA. And he spoke a lot about what you just said, that there's a lot of money going around. It's a huge beneficiary program. And he was pretty proud of the fact that in terms of improper payments, they have a really high accuracy rate. I think he said for overpayments, it was a 99.8% accuracy rate. For underpayments, it was 99.9%. What is interesting and kind of headline grabbing is that those tiny little percentages add up to a lot of money because the program is so big. So my question is, the size and scope of the agency and the work that they're doing, how does that impact how you guys approach these audits and these challenges that the IG is really focused on?
Very good question, Sean. And it's sort of interesting is that we work very closely with the Social Security Administration on a lot of different issues, and one of which is they have to report to Congress and to us on a quarterly basis any improper, you know, any large amounts of or high dollar amounts of improper payments. And for the most part, SSA doesn't have very high dollar improper payments, mostly because of, well, a couple of things. One is with the size of the program, it'd have to be a very, very large improper payment to be of that type of a record. And most of the payments that SSA is doing are in the tens of thousands, not the hundreds of thousands of outlays. In that regard, what we're looking at is more of smaller amounts. And because of, you know, even though it's a small amount, there's so many benefits going out there, it does account for a lot of investigations and a lot of issues that are on it. And the other thing is, what I was saying before, with partnership with Pete Spencer and the Office of Budget and Finance, or him, he is the CFO of the organization, is that we work together on having the audit of SSA's financial statements each year. And it's gotten a clean record for the last, I guess, 15 years. And it is the SSA every year, because of our audit that we do on it, has gotten an award for Certificate of Excellence in Reporting, or the SEER reward, which SSA has been the, of all government agencies, has received every year more than any other agency. And we take pride in the fact that we're part of that audit.
What's the secret to that success?
I think a big reason for the success on it is probably cooperation. What we use is we use an outside private audit firm, Grant Thornton, and they give access to my auditors and the Grant Thornton auditors to all of SSA's activities and events. We have teams go out and do their field offices on it, do reviews. We have, I guess, an IT penetration testing to make sure that they have sufficient IT safeguards built in. And I think a lot of it is that why my mantra is, and I hope many of the other IGs, is no surprises to the agency. So when we're doing the financial statement audit or any of our audits, we're open about it. We explain to the agency as we're going through what we're identifying. And so by the time we do our final audit report or the financial statement audit on it, there's no surprises. Any recommendations in it have already been recognized by the agency, and the agency has already, you know, started taking steps towards correcting them. We have two things: a high response rate from SSA to our audit recommendations, and then also a high rate of activity in enacting those recommendations that we make. So I think for both of those, it helps with the agency identifying any systemic problem that they have and correcting it. And we take pride in the fact that they get clean financial statements because of that.
Well, congratulations on that success, Patrick. And we're going to take a quick break right now. But when we come back, I'd like to ask you specifically about a case of fraud that has been grabbing headlines recently. And the work of your office was critical to that success story. So when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about a fraud case in Puerto Rico. My name is Sean McCauley, and for the month of November, we're exploring the Social Security Administration. I'm speaking with Patrick O'Carroll. He's the Inspector General for the SSA. Agency of the Month returns in just a moment.
It looks like the forecast is calling for a whole new cloud. Brought to you by CenturyLink. Get a visionary cloud infrastructure and custom communication solutions with CenturyLink, all built on a global, secure, carrier-grade network. And their custom solutions and support models are designed to enhance your efficiency every day of the week. Let their cloud infrastructure blanket you with security. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov. That's CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Sean McCauley, and for the month of November, we're looking at the Social Security Administration. Today I'm speaking with Patrick O'Carroll. He's the Inspector General for the SSA. And when we last left off, I mentioned that there was a giant case of fraud in Puerto Rico that your office had a big hand in stopping. How did this investigation start? How did you figure out that there was something going on in Puerto Rico?
That is a very good example of a systemic attack towards SSA's, you know, benefits. And so I guess to walk you through from the beginning of it was about, a few years ago, we were notified by SSA that they were starting to notice what we'd call boilerplate diagnostics on people applying for disability benefits. And by that, meaning that every single person coming in was getting the exact same checklist of all what the maladies that they had and the different issues on it. And we were finding they were coming from pretty much the same group of medical providers on it. So anyway, at that point there, we started taking a look. And also at the same time, there was some private industry that had closed plants in Puerto Rico where large amounts of the workforce were laid off from work, and within a matter of months, all of them were ending up applying for, and many were getting on, Social Security benefits, very high percentages of it, which again became very suspicious in that how could they be able to work 1 month and the following month be severely disabled. So what we did with that was is we met with other law enforcement agencies in Puerto Rico, and specifically we work with the FBI and the Puerto Rican Police Department, and we started taking a look at similarities on it. And by using informants and undercovers over a period of about 3 years, we identified a group of Well, first we identified a former SSA employee who was becoming a non-attorney representative, bringing people in for benefits, and we're finding that this person was recommending each of these people to a group of medical providers. And as a result of that, we then started inserting our people, or we inserted an undercover to be introduced and started meeting these doctors and getting referred to the doctors. And as a result of it, we identified a large group of people that were put on benefits by three or four suspicious or unscrupulous medical providers. And as a result of that, we did a wrap-up of that with the number of, I guess, as we said before, approximately 75 arrests. And they're all being now charged in the by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Puerto Rico.
Tell me a little bit about the interagency collaboration for this, because you worked with the Secret Service, I believe, the FBI, Immigration Customs Enforcement, Education OIG.
Well, what we're finding out, and it's one of the things with the offices of the Inspector Generals, is that in many cases we got a lot more investigations and requirements than people. So we find that by partnering with other law enforcement organizations, in many times it'll give us a wider expanse on our investigations. And we'll find, like, with what happens is with a lot of the different benefit programs, if a person is trying to defraud one, they're going after the others. And so what we're finding is that by using, as an example, other benefit programs, Veterans Administration, education, agriculture, on it, when they're going for one benefit program, they're usually doing the others, so we partner with them. And that's where also, too, is with the financial crimes. Secret Service is involved in the financial crimes, so we keep them involved. And we usually do this on a task force type of a basis. In Puerto Rico, the specific one we were talking about there, initially we started out with these organizations. We kept them all informed to the different people that we were investigating. But I got to give most of the credit of our partnership in Puerto Rico was really with the FBI. They provided a lot of their own agents to help in our investigation on it. And I got to say, we have a small office in Puerto Rico where FBI has a very large office. So they provided, their manpower, their infrastructure, and other ways on it. In fact, I was just meeting with the agent in charge of the FBI the other day and thanking them for all the help that they've done with us on this investigation. And to be truthful, the other part of it is that there's a task force there used in the Puerto Rican Police Department, and we've incorporated them into doing some of our investigations, and now we have a couple of their officers or detectives assigned to us and as one of our groups that are working in Puerto Rico. So I got to say is that it's been a great group of law enforcement and cooperation down there, and that's pretty much everybody pitched in to be able to do that large amount of arrests that are going on.
And when you say task force, that doesn't exclusively mean the work that you're doing with other agencies. You have your own groups within the SSA's IG's office that work on this kind of stuff too, don't you?
Exactly. In fact, what I was there for the last, 3 days on it was that I was one meeting with our partners with the FBI, but also at the same time, we have a unit there which is called a Cooperative Disability Investigations Unit, or a CDI unit. We have 24 of them across the United States, but we have one located in Puerto Rico. And what these units are is it's one of our investigators is the team leader for the team. And then what we'll have is we'll have two people from the State Disability Determination Center, which would be state employees. We'd have two SSA employees on it. And then we'd also have two local law enforcement. In Puerto Rico, we have two Puerto Rican Police Department detectives assigned to us. And that unit goes, and when a person looks suspicious when they're applying for a disability, they're referred to this unit. And this unit then will go and do a couple of things. One is they'll do kind of electronic checks, for example, to be seeing whether a person has a commercial driver's license when they're claiming that they're sight impaired, or something that would look suspicious in those regards. And then what we'd also be doing is that in many cases, we'll send our officers out, and our officers will bring along either a van and recording video recording equipment, and we'll just follow the person around to see if the person is as disabled as they claim they are. And in fact, Sean, we have one example of it that I showed to a hearing that we had in Congress where we followed a person from their house. They walk perfectly out to their car, drive their car. They go to a drugstore, wait in line at the drugs, go into the drugstore and buy a cane, then go back in their car, drive to the Social Security office, and then lean over and limping severely, walk in with the cane, make their application for a disability, then walk out to the car using the cane, get in the car, drive back to the drugstore, and you're ready for this? Walk into the drugstore with us following him, and then hand the cane in and get the refund back and walk out of the store. So as an example, that's the type of local cooperation teams that we're using to, you know, identify disability fraud.
As organized and precise as you are, the people that you're fighting against also have their own little methodologies and plans that they're using in order to fraud the Social Security Administration.
Absolutely, and that's what we try to stay up with all the time. Another one that's kind of interesting along those lines, Sean, is what we're finding now is social media. Just like all of us are now using social media to get our word out to the public, what we're finding is the public in many cases are getting a lot of leads out about themselves. So when I was saying that when we take a look at somebody who's making a suspicious disability claim, one of the first things that we do now is we go out to the different media sites like Facebook and other ones, and we take a look and see what they have posted on it. And many times we have a person that we're being told has, you know, severe agoraphobia or is afraid of dealing with other people on it type of thing, and we go to their Facebook page and we find out that they're a public entertainer standing in front of audiences and everything else. And as we can, you know, kind of say is that's what we call a clue when we're going back to saying that the person really isn't disabled.
What is the legal process for doing these types of investigations? I'm assuming you can't just immediately jump into a criminal investigation. You have to do some of your own legwork. So what are the legal procedures that you have to follow when you're doing an investigation like this and thinking about planning future ones?
Well, one is there's a lot of different types of, you know, fraud, you know, towards the agency on it, and they go from pretty much the simplistic to the very complicated. And I guess the best thing, Sean, is I can walk you through a couple of the different types of investigations that we have to give you an idea how where it stops being civil and it starts becoming criminal. For example, I guess one of the easiest ones, and this is the one I think most people think about when you hear about fraud towards Social Security, is the hiding of a death. And in that type of a case, and that's what everyone usually thinks of with Social Security, is your retirement portion of Social Security. And I think everybody's heard the stories or whatever of the person who dies and then the family conceals the death and conceals the body in many cases. And that's sort of, I guess, you know, one of the easiest types of, you know, ones for us to explain is that when all the people on the block are saying that, you know, we haven't seen Mr. Smith now for about, you know, 3 months or 6 months or 8 months or whatever, and eventually, you know, the police department will go up to the door and ask, is Mr. Smith here, or find some reason for it, or even let us know that they have concerns, and we'll take a look to see if the checks are being cashed. And in many cases, we'll see who is cashing the checks. And then we'd go and we'll go to that location, and sometimes we'll find that, you know, the person has died and the family has hidden the body in a back room or put it in a freezer or any number of different ways to hide the fact that the person is dead. And in that case, it's a pretty simple way was we can determine when the person died and the fact that they've been hiding it and cashing the checks for all that time period. And that's usually a pretty easy type of one that we would be able to prosecute. Where it gets a little bit more complicated is when we start getting in the disability side of the, you know, because if you, I guess I should have said at the beginning of it, Social Security is set up with, is basically two sides to the house. One is the retirement and survivor insurance portion of it, which is also has a disability insurance side of it. And then the other side of the house is the SSI side of the house, Supplemental Security Income, which is for people that are either aged or infirm. And when we're talking on the disability side of the house, many times when a lot of our investigations pertain to people that will claim that they're disabled and then go back to work. And in that case there, again, it's one of those things that are fairly easy for us to be able to, you know, to show to a jury that this person lied when they came in and said they were disabled because they're capable enough of working. And then that's the type of stuff where nowadays we can find a lot of them probably electronically in terms of a person comes in, let's say, use it as an example, a truck driver, a person who's been driving a truck comes into Social Security and says that he's severely infirm and that he's unable to drive a truck anymore, and he goes on to disability. And then we find out either from somebody, you know, calling our hotline or other way of finding out that this person is still working, and then we go and we'll electronically check. And in some cases, what we'll find is that a person who claimed that they're disabled, their earnings will stop on their Social Security number, and then at the same time, we'll see that a spouse or another member of their families who hadn't been had any earnings against their Social Security number, that now they're all being posted towards that number. And we'd figure that's where a person is just trying to deceive us in terms of thinking that they are disabled when they're not. We have another one where in many cases we have a difficult time prosecuting people for a crime of, in many cases, not that high a monetary amount. And when you think about it is that with the courts so clogged up with drug cases and crimes of violence and other things on it, in many cases you need something that's going to, you know, convince a U.S. attorney that it's worth the prosecution of it. And in our cases, a lot of times the dollar amount isn't that high. So what we try to do with that is we go to a U.S. attorney's office and say that, hey, we need to make a, you know, send a signal to, you know, the people in this community that it's illegal to be, you know, claiming you're disabled when you're not, and would you, you know, authorize the prosecution on some cases so that we can, you know, show people that crime doesn't pay and that you will be caught. Another thing that we do, and if we don't have enough, you know, money or enough loss to the government for to be attractive as a criminal investigation, we also have the opportunity to go after them civilly. And a lot of times what we'll do is that if we can't prosecute them criminally, we will then go after them on a civil basis and say that they have lied on their application and they've lied a number of times in order to get this illegitimate benefit. And then we will go after them for the money that they've taken from the government, and we will also fine them for doing it. So we can use civil penalties as well.
So in a nutshell, I mean, your office is dealing with a huge workload, and I'd like to talk a little bit about the budget realities that are facing all agencies and then how specifically it's affecting the Office of Inspector General at the Social Security Administration. But first, we're going to take a quick break. Again, I'm speaking with Patrick O'Carroll. He's the Inspector General for the Social Security Administration. This is Agency of the Month, and for the month of November, we're taking a look at the SSA. You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Let's get down to brass tacks. There's nothing more important than trust. CenturyLink offers cybersecurity solutions to the government. And the Department of Homeland Security has approved CenturyLink to provide enhanced cybersecurity services to critical infrastructure entities to keep you efficient and secure. As your trusted technology partner, their visionary cloud infrastructure, global broadband network, along with custom communication solutions and responsive dedicated support, provide the scalable solutions you need 24/7, 365. Visit CenturyLink.com/gov to learn more.
Welcome back to Agency of the Month on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. I'm Sean McCauley, and I'm speaking with Patrick O'Carroll. He's the Inspector General for the Social Security Administration. And Patrick, in our last segment, we talked a lot about a fraud case in Puerto Rico and at large the intense workload that your office is dealing with. How have budget cuts affected the work that you're trying to do?
Wow, it's I got to say that's something that I think all of us are trying to grapple with right now is after the close down of the government, what the effect was on us. And in our case, a couple things are, were a little bit different about Social Security and other agencies is that many of the Social Security's offices were open during the shutdown, and that was in order to maintain the payment of benefits that are, you know, I guess the beneficiaries of Social Security. So as a result of that, our investigators were considered essential, were accepted personnel, and all reported to work. However, part of our instructions because of the shutdown was not to be doing our normal investigative work on it unless it was, you know, in an emergency type of situation. Most of our responses were in order to, you know, assure the safety of SSA employees. So we pretty much had a cessation in our investigative work, went more 100% in terms of employee safety on it during the shutdown. On the bigger picture, for the last year with sequestration on it, is that in our case as a government agency, about 90% of all of the money that we get in our appropriation every year is fixed costs. And by fixed costs, that's pretty much, you know, the salaries for all of our employees, the payment for, you know, rent on all of our facilities and our other, you know, just day-to-day fixed costs. So when we get a 5% hit across the board on it, the only that way it can really come out is in terms of our daily type of work. So we had to cut back on a lot of our travel. We had to cut back on the gas in our vehicles. We had to, you know, cut back on the travel of our auditors when we were going out doing audits on it and we were doing more electronically. And I got to tell you is that you can do only so much electronically and by using, you know, remotely. But when it really comes down to, you know, good investigations and good audits, it's really face-to-face contact that's necessary. And that's what's really suffered the most as we've been doing all these shutdowns, is that we're not able to get out there. And I guess the thing that many of us are, as managers or government, are now trying to look at is that we've been cutting and cutting and cutting now for the last 5 years to a point that with the last time when it came down to the sequestration and we were taking a look, we had to make a decision and get a call and get permission to put a cartridge into a printer for a computer on it. It was down to that type of a level that we weren't even able to, you know, put ink in our printers. So I got to say is that all these cuts are having a very, very dramatic effect on not only my office of Inspector General, all of the offices of Inspector General. And in many ways, it's pretty, you know, pound foolish because all of us, our return on investment is so much higher than what it costs to operate our agencies.
Patrick, I'm going to have to stop you right there because we're out of time. I'd like to ask you a little bit more, though, about how you're keeping up morale at the SSAOIG during sequestration, and also a little bit more about how you're going to plan for the future. If you're listening on the radio, this concludes this edition of Agency of the Month featuring the Social Security Administration. However, our entire conversation is archived online. Just go on federalnewsradio.com, use the search term Agency of the Month. Again, I'm Sean McCauley, and thanks for listening to Federal News Radio.
You've been listening to Agency of the Month, brought to you by CenturyLink on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety at federalnewsradio.com. Agency of the Month, Thursday mornings at 11:30 AM, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Your source for federal news now.